The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, Biomass, how the town of Holly Springs put itself on the map as a national life sciences hub. Before the cover section, we'll read the biz and then the reporter pages. Biz is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Quail Corner scores a big win. Shopping center not far from Raleigh Towers lands iconic barbecue restaurant. Toward the end of a long day, Clyde Cooper's barbecue owner, Debbie Holt, worked in a makeshift office, while behind her, customers ordered barbecue and tea just like so many decades before. Cooper's had been downtown since 1938, but Holt sought a change. She looked south of town at Wendell and Seaboard Station, but in all cases, she said she just didn't feel it. Then she got a message about a former gas station site at Quail Corners in North Raleigh. The Red Hot and Blue chain out of Winston-Salem had closed there, and the space was available. Clyde Cooper's final day downtown was January 1st and was open within a week with a favorable 10-year lease. Heaven sent, Holt said. Quail Corners gets overshadowed by North Hills and the Exchange Raleigh, but it has a long history and a favorable location. Dan Austin Sr., who died in 2022, developed it in the 1960s, and the business remains in the family. Andy's Pizza, the Steakmaster, the ACC Lounge, and the All-Star Bike Shop all had long runs there. The current lineup includes locally based shops such as the Butcher's Market, Deja Brew, and the Carriage House, among others. Legendary downtown restaurant Big Ed's has a location there, and Peace Camera moved from Peace Street in 2016. And now Quail Corners is expanding down Millbrook Road. Meanwhile, the nearby Quail Hollow and Lakemont neighborhoods are seeing rising interest from young families happy to fix up or tear down a ranch or split-level home. Cooper's is evolving, too. As Holt ambled through the place, there were booths left over from Red Hot and Blue and the largest eating space around the back. But Holt is already planning to expand out the front, and the original stuff now in storage will return and help Clyde Cooper's regain its old feel in its new and interesting location. Bahama Breeze closing in Raleigh as parent pivots. A Raleigh restaurant with a tropical theme is barely going to make it out of winter. Darden Restaurants of Orlando, Florida is closing 14 of its 28 Bahama Breeze locations, including the one at 3309 Wake Forest Drive near Interstate 440 in Raleigh. Bahama Breeze locations set for closure will remain open through April 5th. Darden decided not to prioritize the Bahama Breeze brand. The Raleigh location, built in 1999, is 11,935 square foot building and 3.32 acre property with an assessed value of $3.54 million, according to property records. Blowing Rock Bar and Restaurant vows to return. A fire has destroyed a historic restaurant and bar in Blowing Rock that is believed to be the oldest continuously serving bar in North Carolina. A beloved bar in Blowing Rock is vowing to return after a devastating fire destroyed it. The Antlers Bar dates to 1932, and now as the Bistro Roca Restaurant, burned in a fire January 24th. The Blowing Rock Fire Department was unable to save the restaurant as the fire came from the lower level. As for a return to business, Bistro Roca posted on its website, not if, but when. More restaurant news. Restaurants see big impact from tough weather. Making a profit in a restaurant business is never a given, and the brutal weather of recent weeks has had restaurant owners scrambling. Losing two weekends in a row like that is just brutal, said George Kinnheim, co-owner of Boatman Spirits Company at Seaboard Station in Raleigh. Kevin Jennings, owner of Urban Food Group, pointed out that the weather has a major impact on tipped and hourly employees. We're losing, but our staff is losing also, he said. But on the other hand, grocery stores see sales surge. When we have a snowstorm, it's like Thanksgiving and Christmas rolled into one, said Kelly Davis, Senior Director of Guest Engagement at Lowe's Foods. And finally, in biz, Raleigh home priced at $9.5 million in Northridge. A home on the rise in Raleigh's Northridge neighborhood carries a whopping price, highlighting the surge in interest in the luxury market. The home at 1208 Barcroft Place is listed at $9.5 million. Listing agent Steve Wall said the home, which is 9,587 square feet, is scheduled to be finished in September and be part of the Triangle Parade of Homes in the fall. The home being built by Raleigh Custom Homes includes 5 bedrooms, 8 bathrooms, and a private sauna. The home is on the golf course at Northridge Country Club and has views of the number 1 and number 17 greens for the Lakes course. Raleigh Custom Homes paid $1.5 million for the location in 2024, according to deed records. The first of the reporter pages is Real Estate and Development, and it is brought to us by Kaylee Thompson. Price plummets for Village apartments. A Village District apartment complex in Raleigh dropped drastically in price in just 4 years. Boston-based TA Realty sold the Maggie apartments for $69.6 million, according to Wake County deed records. That's a $21.5 million decrease from the $91.2 million the company paid for the property in early 2022. The buyer is Tishman Speyer out of New York. The firm said it will invest in upgrades such as improving the exterior and the swimming pool, along with updating individual units, per a press release from the company. It did not share how much it will invest and declined to provide information beyond the release. The 5-story apartment building sits on 2.83 acres at the corner of Oberlin Road and Clark Avenue, across from the Village District Shopping Center. It has 244 units and 9,000 square feet of ground floor retail space that fronts Oberlin Road. Retailers include Tupelo Honey, Southern Kitchen and Bar, Village Spa Nails, and an AT&T store. There are studios and 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units ranging from $1,562 to $40,022, according to Gray Star, which manages the apartment complex. Residents have access to a swimming pool, a rooftop terrace, grilling station, dog park, fitness center, TV lounge, and golf simulator. The Maggie was built in 2014 by Taft Family Ventures, and it's assessed at $66.1 million. Apartment sales seem to be hanging in the $50 million to $70 million range in the Triangle. The average sales price for multifamily assets in the Triangle from 2020 to 2025 was $69.6 million, according to data from Northmark. In recent months, Hawthorne at the Parkway Apartments in Cary sold for $60 million. The Live on Hillsborough Student Apartments, the Live on Hillsborough Student Apartments in Raleigh, sold for $52 million. And Aura 509 in Durham sold for $52 million. In Hillsborough, developer advances a $90 million project. An Orange County town is about to get a jolt of growth in the form of hundreds of apartments and townhomes. The Beach Company of Charleston, South Carolina, will soon start vertical construction on its 346-unit project, Persimmon at Cates Creek in Hillsborough between Interstates 40 and 85. Site work was completed last year. We have a lot of confidence in this submarket just because of the lack of new product there. This is really an untapped area, said John Reyna, development manager for the Beach Company. We saw an opportunity to provide housing that is of the same quality as market rate, Class A units in Chapel Hill and Durham, but price them at a discount to those areas. With its location along Interstate 40 and 85, more companies and developers are starting to take interest in Hillsborough. The Beach Company's confidence in Hillsborough, with a population of around 10,000, is what pushed it to start site work on the $90 million development last year, receiving financing. The Beach Company will start vertical construction on the 30 townhomes first, with delivery of the first units expected in December. Construction on the 316 apartments will begin shortly after the townhomes, with completion targeted for 2027. Cary Apartments near retail center sold. An apartment complex along a major thoroughfare in Cary is under new ownership following a sale to a New York City firm for nearly $61 million. DRA advisors acquired the Hawthorne at the Parkway Apartments for $60.85 million, according to Wake County deed records. The apartments are off Southeast Cary Parkway, a little east of the bustling retail corner at Kildare Farm Road that includes a Trader Joe's store, Barnes & Noble, Aldi grocery store, and restaurants. Highway 64 is just a little south of the apartments. The seller was Hawthorne Residential Partners of Greensboro, which bought it in 2013 for $27.1 million. The complex was built in 1992 and is 92% leased, per the apartment's website. And finally, in real estate and development, converted hotel properties go back to lender. A California developer has given a pair of Triangle apartment properties back to the lender in order to avoid foreclosure proceedings. Vivo Investment Group returned the properties, Vivo Living Raleigh and Vivo Living Durham, to its lender, Keystone National Group, according to the deed records for Wake and Durham counties. Neither Vivo Investments nor Keystone National responded to multiple requests for comment about the situation. Vivo's website was not active as of February 2nd. Vivo Living Raleigh is a converted Four Points by Sheraton hotel with 113 units. Vivo Investments purchased the property in 2022 for $12.5 million. At the time, Keystone provided a $15.25 million loan per property records. Vivo Living Durham used to be the Carolina Duke Inn. It opened as affordable apartments in 2023. Vivo Investment paid $10 million for the property in 2022. Reporter Zach Ezzone brings us the higher education and healthcare section. His top story this week, Duke files plans for cancer center. Duke University's health system has filed site plans for a $150 million cancer center in Durham a year after securing a major donation to support the facility. Duke Health in December submitted paperwork in Durham County to develop a two-story, 48,000-square-foot medical clinic on its main campus. The filings follow Duke receiving a $50 million donation in late 2024 to support development of a proton beam therapy center. The filings outline plans to develop the Duke Proton Center on Elba Street next to a Duke Hospital parking garage. Duke plans to demolish the existing Civitan building to accommodate the project. At capacity, the center will deliver proton therapy, a more precise type of radiation that has fewer side effects than conventional radiation therapy, to about 800 cancer patients a year, including adult and pediatric patients, Duke health officials said in a statement. Proton therapy uses a beam of protons to target cancer cells, often reducing side effects compared to conventional radiation treatment. This precision is important in treating sensitive areas like the head or neck. Duke expects the center to open by 2029. Duke, in a December bond filing, estimated the facility could cost $150 million. When the health system announced the anonymous donation in December 2024, it estimated the facility would cost about $120 million. As of September 30th, Duke had received $12.5 million of the $50 million pledge, according to the bond filing, which also notes that Duke is considering partners on the project. Duke initially received a certificate of need from the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services in 2018 to develop a two-room proton therapy center. UNC Health similarly received approval from state regulators that same year for its own proton therapy project. In rural health news, nonprofit connected to ECU Health cuts jobs. A health care program serving Medicaid enrollees in rural North Carolina is threatened by a lack of funding. Access East, a nonprofit affiliated with ECU Health, is eliminating 31 positions months after government funding ran out for a statewide health care program. The Greenville Health System filed a notice on January 19th informing officials of the layoffs. The cuts are related to the discontinuation of state funding for the NC Healthy Opportunities Pilots Program, according to the notice signed by Kelly Weatherly, Chief Human Resources Officer for ECU Health. The program evaluates whether providing high-needs Medicaid enrollees with non-medical interventions related to housing, food, transportation, and toxic stress can improve health outcomes and lower costs. The federal government authorized up to $650 million in Medicaid funding over 5 years, and the program launched in 2022. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services selected three organizations to operate the program in different regions. Access East covers nine counties, including Beaufort, Edgecombe, Halifax, and Pitt. According to a Duke University and UNC Chapel Hill analysis, the pilot saved an average of $85 per enrollee per month, or $1,020 per enrollee per year. On the manufacturing front, a Connecticut firm to open drug plant in Apex. A Connecticut company plans to open a drug manufacturing facility in Apex this year to produce generic drugs lacking in the U.S. Apiject Holdings signed a lease for a 30,000-square-foot facility at 2100 Production Drive in the Cash Corporate Center, where its subsidiary Vanguard Utility will make generic injectable medicines used in emergency care, painkillers, cancer drugs, and more. Darren Alkins, CEO of Vanguard Utility, said the company aims to boost U.S. production of generic drugs most in need. The United States right now is short on over 200 hospital drugs that are critical for care, and we're going to be supplying those on an ongoing basis, he said. Vanguard plans to invest about $70 million in the Apex facility, with about half going toward capital equipment. Alkins said the company expects to launch its first product in the fourth quarter. And finally, in higher education, college costs. Higher tuition likely as schools seek increases. Nearly all University of North Carolina system universities could have higher tuition rates for new undergraduates, in-state students this fall. A committee of the UNC System Board of Governors recently reviewed proposed tuition increases at all universities, which range from 1.5% to 3% for undergraduate in-state students. If approved by the full board, this would be the first time in a decade that tuition for undergraduate in-state students has increased at the UNC system, which historically has sought to keep costs low. Last year, the Board of Governors decided it would allow institutions to propose tuition increases of up to 3% for resident undergraduates. Turning now to news from the retail and restaurant scene, Kate Tracy is here to give us that story. Hockey training facility to open in June. The pucks will soon be flying at a new hockey facility in Wake County as demand for the sport continues to intensify in the Triangle. Puck Masters, headquartered in Michigan, is underway on its hockey training venue at 414 South Main Street in Rollsville, with plans to open in June. The 16,000-square-foot location is part of a larger athletic training facility that developer Optimal Equity Corp is building. The project broke ground last May. Alex Johnson, general manager for the Rollsville Puckmasters, said Rollsville is a good fit for the company, given the sheer volume of folks that are interested in hockey in general in the Raleigh area. The town in northeast Wake County has been a hotbed of home building for years. Its population has raced above 10,000. The Carolina Hurricanes have been a key part of hockey growth in the region, along with the high number of transplants from the northeast and Midwest, where hockey is a major youth sport. Puckmasters will feature an ice sheet that's three-quarters the size of an NHL rink. That's 200 feet by 85 feet, in addition to a skating treadmill for their stride development and conditioning. The venue will also have a skills lane with a synthetic ice surface for goalie, passing, and shooting training. Law firm trades space for RTP site. Lured by amenities, a global law firm is investing in a new office building in Research Triangle Park. K&L Gates, LLP, has leased 20,000 square feet on the fourth floor of Horseshoe at Hub RTP at 3151 Ellion Drive and will move in this November. The new office will be downsizing for K&L Gates, as its current office at 430 Davis Drive is 25,000 square feet. Office managing partner Michael Hinkle said the firm's Davis Drive lease is ending, which prompted the move to a building with direct access to restaurants, retail, and other amenities. K&L Gates wanted to be within the boundaries of Research Triangle Park, now that the park is moving toward becoming a live-work-play destination. The only thing I hear from most people is, why can't we move faster, Hinkle said. K&L Gates will join Genesis as an office tenant at Horseshoe. Hinkle said K&L Gates has been downsizing its office footprint at its more than 45 offices around the world. While attorneys will still have private offices at its horseshoe space, the offices will be slightly smaller, but with modern furniture that Hinkle said will take up less room than at the Davis Drive location. The firm's RTP office has 25 attorneys and 11 other staff members, many of whom work from the office 4 or 5 days a week, Hinkle said. The firm plans to hire at the new office. Hinkle said the RTP office deals heavily in the healthcare sector, including regulatory matters and white-collar defense. The firm, with its headquarters in Pittsburgh, has a Raleigh office as well. It ranks as the fifth largest law firm in the region, according to Triangle Business Journal research. In all, 78,000 square feet of office space remains available at Horseshoe, as does 10,000 square feet of retail space. Local businesses respond to strike over immigration. Small businesses in the Triangle had a mixed response to a nationwide strike protesting the federal immigration crackdown in Minnesota. Some closed January 30th to participate, but some said they couldn't afford to close given the general slowdown in business in January. Raleigh chef Chidi Kumar, an immigrant, said it was not feasible for the Aja restaurant to close on normally busy Friday night. A lot of people in restaurants are immigrants, and we all need to work, she said. Boatman Spirits Company, Figalina Transfer Company Food Hall, and Raleigh Brewing were other businesses that expressed sympathy for the general strike, but elected to stay open. However, Quail Ridge Books did close. A one-day general strike is symbolic, but as booksellers, we believe in the power of symbols, the store's social media post read. New Top Chef season features Chef Diaz. A Triangle chef will appear on the Carolinas season of Top Chef, which premieres in March. Oscar Diaz, a two-time James Beard Award semifinalist, is one of 15 contestants on the Bravo show that is in its 23rd season. Charlotte's Brittany Cochran is also on this season. Diaz, known for his restaurant Little Bull in Durham, is bringing adios to Raleigh-Durham International Airport. He also opened Acton Coffee and Bar recently in downtown Durham as well as in Clayton. A year ago, he signed a lease for an 8,000-square-foot building in downtown Durham for a restaurant and rooftop bar that has yet to open. Diaz's other restaurants include Tataco and Barbaro Lounge in Durham and Chilito Taqueria in Burlington. Dane Huffman is here with news from on the coast. EV battery maker delays a $650 million plant. A battery materials manufacturer based in India continues to hold off on starting construction on its $650 million factory in North Carolina's fastest-growing county amid policy changes in Washington and soft demand for electric vehicles. Epsilon Advanced Materials will not break ground on its plant at the Mid-Atlantic Industrial Rail Park megasite in Brunswick County until the second half of this year, according to CEO Sunit Kupar. The company said last summer that it would break ground in early 2026. When the company announced plans for its first U.S. factory back in 2023, the plan was to break ground in 2024. Kupar said the delay is due to a range of issues. We're progressing well with our facility in North Carolina, he wrote in an email to the Triangle Business Journal. We have completed all pre-construction permitting with the big beautiful bill and changes in the Inflation Reduction Act, along with the cell producers pivoting from EV to energy storage space. It's taken more time than expected. We're working on closing the contracts and moving forward with the construction. The bill, part of President Donald Trump's agenda in 2025, aims to reduce reliance on foreign companies when it comes to battery manufacturing. Plus, under the Trump administration, subsidies and tax credits tied to the EV industry have been allowed to expire. In its October 2023 announcement, Epsilon said it would create 500 jobs over 3 years to produce natural and synthetic graphite anode material. Companies tied to the EV sector have been impacted by slow growth in EV demand. The biggest example of this is VinFast, the Vietnamese electric vehicle manufacturer that says it won't be operational at its Chatham County plant until 2028, a 4-year delay from its initial scheduled timeline. Wilmington Shopping Center demolished. Demolition has begun on a Wilmington shopping center that dates to the 1950s. The North 17 shopping center is being knocked down, the Wilmington Star News reported. A five-story mixed-use project will replace the shopping center. The project will have four stories of residential space and one of retail, the newspaper reported. The shopping center dates to 1954, and the property is valued at $2.5 million, the Wilmington Business Journal reported. The shopping center held Elizabeth's Pizza for 35 years before the pizza shop closed in 2023. But the center is located at 4302 Market Street, a busy location in a city that is booming with population growth. Wilmington's population was 106,000 in 2010, but has since risen to roughly 127,000. The Market Street location is a short drive to downtown, which is prospering, and perhaps 15 minutes to the beach, depending on traffic. Interim town manager named in Morehead City. The Morehead City town manager has resigned, effective January 30th, according to the Carteret County News-Times. The newspaper reported that the town council requested his resignation after a special session on January 29th. The newspaper reported that his annual salary is $188,686, and he will get 3 months of severance pay. Daniel Williams has been named the interim town manager. In a letter of resignation, Turner said, quote, "This decision was made after careful consideration with my wife, with whom we are proudly expecting the birth of our third child, a son in April, and in continuing my urgent work with others that need consultation and capacity building," unquote. Sporting goods retailer files $100 million bankruptcy. A North Carolina wholesaler that's a big name in fishing and hunting equipment has filed for bankruptcy liquidation, listing more than $100 million in debt. Big Rock Sports filed for Chapter 7 liquidation January 16th, along with multiple related companies. The company did not return a request to comment. Its attorney, Brett Neave of Smith, Anderson, Blunt, Dorsett, Mitchell, and Jernigan, declined to talk about the situation. The firm has corporate offices in Morehead City and Graham. It also has a distribution center in Charlotte, a taxidermy facility in Raleigh, and operations in multiple locations. Hundreds of outdoor retailers, from mom-and-pop bait shops to national manufacturers, are among more than 11,000 creditors listed in the filing. The biggest creditors include a pair of subordinated lenders. Stevens Capital is owed more than $37 million, and BLHIT Capital owed more than $32 million. Regions Bank is owed nearly $18 million, and that tops the secured creditor list. The three alone represented 86% of all reported liabilities. Big Rock Sports, which reported $140 million in 2025 revenue through September, traces back to All Sports Supply, founded in Portland, Oregon in 1955. We turn now to this week's cover story, Small Town, Major Hub. Once a crossroads, Holly Springs is now a national biotech powerhouse. Zach Ezone is the writer of our cover story. Decades before moving to Switzerland as a healthcare executive, Paul Basie began his career at a Genentech facility in California. About 30 years later, he's helping Genentech, a biotechnology company that North Carolina officials pursued for decades, develop its first East Coast manufacturing facility in Holly Springs. I actually started as a technician in a facility like this on a night shift washing glassware, said Basie, who leads the high-volume technical operations portfolio for Roche, or Roche, Genentech's parent company. Genentech in May picked Holly Springs for its first East Coast facility after weighing more than 60 possible locations and narrowing the options to Ohio or North Carolina. The company began construction on Friendship Road south of US 1 in August. With the site still being prepared and concrete not yet poured, Genentech decided to double down on Holly Springs. The company in January increased its planned investment in the facility from $700 million to $2 billion and raised its expected job count from 420 to 520. Genentech's site is now just red clay and pine trees directly across the road from where fellow biotech Amgen is investing about $1.5 billion. The activity amid the wooded landscape reflects the significant changes in Holly Springs, where four major life sciences companies are on track to employ about 3,200 people in the coming years. This includes technicians, scientists, engineers, and other crucial roles with high wages. Genentech, for example, expects jobs at its facility to pay an average of nearly $120,000. Chief among the factors in Genentech's decision to invest in Holly Springs was time, which is crucial in drug manufacturing. The faster the company can build its facility and secure regulatory approval, the quicker it can begin producing and shipping drugs. The time value of money is definitely a factor, Basie said. The sooner we're able to start construction, the sooner we achieve licensure. And this site, this community, we're fast. Basie credits the ability to move fast to an alignment between state, county, and local officials. This ability continues through local permitting processes, which contributed to the company's recent decision to increase its investment in Holly Springs. The investment is also the latest example of Holly Springs' emergence as one of the leading biomanufacturing hubs, not just in North Carolina, but across the U.S. Genentech's expansion continues a trend of companies scaling up investments in Holly Springs shortly after establishing operations there. Holly Springs' emergence as a biotech hub began in 2009 when a vaccine manufacturing facility now run by CSL Seqirus opened. The town's momentum has ramped up as Fujifilm Biotechnologies in 2021, Amgen also 2021, and Genentech 2025 have committed billions of dollars to projects expected to bring thousands of jobs. Holly Springs' rise in the life sciences industry is the result of a thoughtful process that has endured changes in town leadership and governance over the past 20 years. Sometimes I joke it is a two-decades overnight success, said Irina Krstanovich, Holly Springs' economic development director since 2016. It's an astounding rise for Holly Springs, a crossroads of only 1,000 people in 1990. Yet the town has emerged as a force in the Triangle, landing massive investments that once landed in other parts of the Triangle, if they landed in the Triangle at all. This success has grown and diversified the tax base of the town that now has swelled to around 50,000 people. Holly Springs is now home to three of the top eight taxpayers in Wake County, with CSL Seqirus, Fujifilm Biotechnologies, and Amgen. Genentech will likely also join this list as it builds out its operations. This gives Holly Springs more resources to respond to the pressures of rapid growth while trying to maintain its economic momentum, said Mayor Mike Kondratik. Our goal now is to consolidate all of these victories and figure out how we can continue the growth in a managed way, he said. The roots of Holly Springs' biotech industry can be traced to an assessment the town performed in the early 2000s. The town was looking at whether it could take advantage of its surroundings, including universities in the Triangle, and position itself as a hub for biomanufacturing. The process identified certain areas of land that could eventually be home to biomanufacturing facilities. This also required various councils and mayors to stick with this vision rather than rezone the land for residential development or other uses, said Krstanovich, who has worked at the town for 20 years. It really took the leadership to stay the course, Krstanovich said, and I'm going to say that's not easy because economic development is truly a slower pace than what you will see with other developments around town. The patience paid off when Novartis selected Holly Springs in 2006 for a flu vaccine facility that CSL Seqirus now runs and operates. It paid off again with Fujifilm Biotechnologies' investment and the subsequent announcements that have followed. In addition to preparing land, the town has invested in utilities and infrastructure, including developing its own wastewater treatment plant. It also offers incentives and a flexible permitting process that allows companies to move faster. I do really think that the true incentive to our companies comes through the speed to market, Krstanovich said. That's really what's the most valuable for them. One-day delays cost millions of dollars, and they cannot be able to deal with that. In Holly Springs, companies have access to the broader Triangle's workforce with the benefits of being in a smaller town. This includes better access to town officials and staff involved in planning and permitting, said David Eford, a partner at Womble Bond Dickinson. They are like a small town in the best sense, of that they can focus on you and your project, Eifert said. But at the same time, they're situated within one of the most populated regions with a ready workforce. Eifert, former general counsel for the North Carolina Department of Commerce, is part of his law firm's economic development team and helps companies identify sites when relocating or expanding. For example, he worked with Fujifilm Biotechnologies and Ypsomed during the site selection process that ultimately landed both of them in Holly Springs. When Fujifilm Biotechnologies announced in 2021 its plans to invest $2 billion in a manufacturing facility in Holly Springs, it was one of North Carolina's largest ever economic development projects. It also put Holly Springs on the map for biotech and pharma companies. That deal was sort of a nationally known project and caused them to really get a lot more looks, I think, than they were getting previously, Eifert said. They've always done a great job, but I think at that point it really started to grow like wildfire. Wildfire. The groundwork shapes the town's challenge of continuing to attract industry while managing growth. From my perspective now, it's how do we continue to build and enhance what we've already done, Kondratic said. There's an element of like, hey man, just don't screw this up. Fujifilm Biotechnologies, part of the larger Japanese Fujifilm Corp, operates as a contract development and manufacturing organization working with pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies to produce biologics, vaccines, and other advanced therapies. Landing Fujifilm was the result of a concerted effort between Holly Springs and developer Helix Ventures, which had worked with the town in the past. Helix already had a small piece of land nearby and eventually took over land from Duke Energy with the aim of creating about a 200-acre park, said John Keener, a principal with Helix Ventures, but Helix soon began hearing from companies. Quite frankly, Fujifilm Biotechnologies jumped on it first and ended up taking roughly two-thirds of the park, Keener said. We thought we'd be working on it for years. Realizing the demand, Helix ramped up its efforts on Camp Helix on the southern side of US 1. The town had identified an area of more than 100 acres as industrial and a future land use plan. This preparation led to Amgen's initial investment in Holly Springs. Helix and the town installed more than 3 miles of pipe and developed other infrastructure, not just for industry, but also for the western part of the community. There was nothing out there, Keener said. So we got together and we had about 18 months to deliver that, as Amgen committed to about originally a little better than 100 acres. The area remains full of pine trees and red clay, but amid the landscape, construction is ramping up. On one side of Friendship Road, Amgen is operating a new 225,000-square-foot facility and building a new second plant that will double its footprint. Across the street, Genentech is beginning construction on a facility that the company expects to be operational in 2029. When looking for potential sites, Genentech evaluated features such as an available workforce and whether utilities like power, wastewater, and transportation infrastructure were in place. The readiness of a potential site was a major factor, Basie said. Genentech in August paid about $81.2 million to acquire a 102-acre parcel on Friendship Road, where it is building its initial facility. It is only using a portion of the site and has room for further growth. Genentech's initial facility design in Holly Springs included shell space that the company could later build out with additional production lines. Rather than wait, Genentech is building those lines with this additional investment. Other companies have expanded their initial investments in Holly Springs as well. After announcing an initial $2 billion investment in Holly Springs in 2021, Fujifilm Biotechnologies revised its plans in 2024 to a $3.2 billion facility. The first phase of the facility came online last year, with the facility expected to have 1,400 employees by 2030. Amgen began construction in January 2025 on a second facility in Holly Springs, around the same time it opened its first plant. Combined, the company plans to invest more than $1.5 billion in the two facilities and expects to have more than 700 workers in Holly Springs by 2032. CSL Seqirus has also invested millions of dollars in its vaccine manufacturing facility after taking over operations from Novartis. The company has become Holly Springs' largest employer with about 1,100 employees. Holly Springs is not just growing economically, its population is surging too. Around 50,000 people live in the town, more than double what it was 15 years ago. This growth brings a new set of challenges. When he knocked on residents' doors while running for mayor last year, Kondratik often heard concerns related to traffic and development. The town has identified transportation hotspots where roads may need to be widened, bridges need replacing, or intersections that need stoplights. But the investment the town is seeing from the biotech industry gives the town more resources to address these problems, Kondratik said. For example, the town has received more than $50 million in outside funding, including from the state and private developers, to support road improvements. The fact that we've been able to attract this level of interest from the industry, that we've been this successful, means that it's going to happen quicker than it otherwise would, Kondratik said. In addition to transportation, the town has more resources for parks and other amenities. The large commercial growth is also leading to more opportunities for small businesses. The town had 600 new businesses start in 2024, about double from the previous year. The development is also shifting the town's tax base. Currently, its tax base is about 70% residential and 30% commercial. Kondratik expects the split to be closer to 60% and 40% respectively by around the time his term ends. The more balanced tax base now gives us more resources to invest in providing more and better services that continue to attract more people, Kondratik said. Next steps for the town's life sciences industry could include companies that further build out the local supply chain. Doug Edgerton, president and CEO of the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, compared that what could come next to an automobile factory. Once you get that plant, then it's things that supply to it, Edgerton said. We have the equivalent of 5 or 6 automobile plants down there in Holly Springs, so we've got a lot of things that could be supplying the needs of those companies. For example, Charlotte's Crescent Communities is building out a collection of speculative life sciences and advanced manufacturing buildings in Holly Springs called The Yield and The Yield North near US 1. Managing Director Chase Curley said Crescent began building out the facilities after seeing biotech companies nationwide scramble to retrofit inadequate buildings simply to get up and running. Last year, Ipsomed, a Swiss medical technology company, acquired a building at The Yield. Their decision to locate in Holly Springs, I think, is widely viewed as this validation of the town's ecosystem, Curley said. Holly Springs has space for more. The town has about 700 acres of land and 3 available buildings between its master plans and its various existing life sciences campuses, Kristanovich said. That means more economic opportunities to pursue. Kondratik, elected in November, has lived in Holly Springs for 13 years. He came to the town for the same quality of life reasons that attracted thousands of others. Balancing this growth is the town's next challenge. Everyone wants to take the snapshot of Holly Springs as it was when they moved here, Kondratik said, but then there's this reality of the town's always going to be growing and changing. And the engine that we have so carefully planned to be in place to help do all of that is the life sciences industry. We've got time for this week's executive voice. It's about Brandy Vannoy. She's the Raleigh managing partner at Johnson & Lambert. Armed with more than 25 years of experience in the accounting industry, Brandy Vannoy is now the Raleigh managing partner at Johnson & Lambert, a Vienna, Virginia-based firm with locations in 8 states. Vannoy now leads a team of nearly 120, including nearly 40 certified public accountants. The firm provides audit and assurance services, tax services, and consulting services to a variety of clients with a focus on the insurance industry and nonprofit organizations. Vannoy served as a tax partner at Johnson Lambert for more than 20 years and began her current role on January 1st. The TBJ did an interview and asked her some questions. How have your past experiences prepared you for this role? When I joined Johnson Lambert, the full-time tax team consisted of just 2 people. We successfully expanded this team to approximately 30 professionals, making a tax a significant contributor to the firm. Navigating the initial stages of a career in a large firm required significant self-reliance. The drive to succeed and the entrepreneurial spirit developed throughout my experience constantly pushed me to innovate. This spirit compels me to elevate every project I undertake, always asking, how can I make this better? This inherent curiosity will be a significant asset in my new role. How has AI affected your operations? We have embraced AI and are looking at more ways it can improve the services we deliver to our clients, as well as the careers of our employees. The integration of automation and AI has led to increased capacity, particularly at entry levels. This is great for efficiency. However, a key challenge is ensuring we can effectively upskill and redeploy staff. We also emphasize that using AI comes with the responsibility of owning the output, a concept we teach through developed trainings and policies for our teams. What's the biggest challenge for your industry? Besides AI, private equity is the other force that is having the biggest impact on the accounting industry. While Johnson Lambert and many other firms are choosing to stay fiercely independent, it still means we have to push ourselves more to continue to be relevant and sustainable. We see firms getting large capital infusions to expand technology, retain talent, and perform acquisitions. To continue to be successful as an independent firm, we will have to be at the top of our game, which means being more agile, focusing on growth, and staying ahead of the curve on technology investments. What is your proudest professional accomplishment? There are many things that I'm proud of in my career, but currently I would say being elected as managing partner. It's humbling to have your peers trust in you to lead them and navigate the future success of the firm. What are your goals for the Triangle office? My short-term goals are to help align our partners and the whole firm with our strategic plan. We have a specialized niche of clients that we serve, so really it's about dialing in to how we can be the best business partner to our clients. Long-term, I hope to leave the firm better than when I joined. We have a long history of success, and with the changing environment, it provides us an opportunity to evaluate how we want to look in 5 years or 10 years. What do you do to relax? The beach is a favorite spot for my family. And what books are currently on your nightstand? Currently, I'm in the middle of several books. I love self-help and leadership books, so I'm currently reading Traction and Good Energy. I also need a fun, mindless read for when I need to unwind, and right now I'm reading Midnight Library. Brandy Van Noy is 49 years old. She got a BSBA from UNC and a MAC from North Carolina State University. She's married, has two children, and her first job was a cashier at IGA Grocery Store. The TBJ's Project Life series of articles concerns executive health and worker wellness in the Triangle. This week's story, written by Connie Gentry, Practice Takes Integrated Path. An innovative program by UNC Health in Pittsburgh looks to build a collaborative approach to behavioral health. Last fall, UNC Health launched an innovative program in Pittsburgh looking to create a more collaborative approach to behavioral health. Since then, Dr. Eric Butler, medical director at the Primary Care Behavioral Health Collaborative, said he's collaborated more with behavioral health specialists in just these 3 to 4 months than in his entire 19-year career. The integrative care model, which unites primary care and behavioral health care, is intended to improve access to mental health care, reduce stigma, and intervene earlier to support patients. It's basically providing more timely behavioral health care to patients in their primary care medical home where they're already used to being seen, Butler said. This is a specific model of behavioral health care that you don't often see in community practices. We have an embedded behavioral health specialist who is a licensed clinical social worker, and she sees patients here with us. When a primary care provider has a patient who needs additional support, we can consult with the behavioral health specialist in real time and do a warm handoff right then. The integration of primary care and behavioral health care isn't a new phenomenon. It's been practiced in some locations across the UNC health system for more than 10 years. And in collaboration with UNC Health Medical Group and UNC Health Alliance, 22 behavioral health specialists serve patients in more than 80 community-based primary care practices. There are also 2 virtual social worker behavioral health specialists serving on an ambulatory crisis team daily to help manage acute psychiatric crises when they present in the primary care practices. However, the model at UNC Health's East Pittsburgh Family Medicine and Pediatrics is differentiated because of its dedicated full-time behavioral health specialist. Embedded in that one practice, and because it also enables a warm handoff transition that is key to providing responsive care in the moment. Jacqueline Fuentes, a behavioral health consultant and the licensed clinical social worker supervisor, started at East Pittsburgh in September. She brought 15 years of counseling in various settings, from managing child and adult welfare for seven counties to working in psychiatric crisis care for Wake County's public schools. This is an entirely different role for her, where she's working with a wide-ranging patient roster from pediatrics to geriatrics and counseling patients as well as their caregivers. Typically, she meets people for the first time when they're at a primary care visit. Getting to talk to them in the moment is really a great window of opportunity to engage with someone, she said, adding that being able to collaborate with the physician providers also produces better outcomes. We can talk about the medication, we can talk about the bigger picture, and we can treat the whole person, Fuentes said. One goal of the project is to assemble quantitative data that will validate this model of care in community practices, and even at this early stage of implementation, Fuentes already has anecdotal assessments of positive outcomes. We've been able to create some direct admissions to avoid emergency department visits or inpatient hospitalizations that are involuntary, which can create more trauma for the patient. And in some high-risk situations of suicidality or harm, which have been teen-focused and in one case adult-focused, we've been able to implement a safety plan that allowed the person to stay in their home, she said. We do this by creating structures to reinforce safety. We modify the environment and work with the families. We also have the patient come in once a week to see a clinician, and we work with other providers that are involved, like schools or psychiatric providers. A fundamental barrier to providing integrative care in community practices has been the cost to start and sustain behavioral health positions. The program at the East Pittsburgh practice has been funded in part by the Dr. James B. Holt Endowment, which honors the work of a family physician who practiced in Chatham and Lee counties for more than 40 years. Dr. Adam Goldstein, Goodwood and Professor of Family Medicine at UNC, also has helped raise funds to launch the program. When a person needs a mental health specialist, they need care today, not 6 months from today, Goldstein said. But what often happens when a patient needs a mental health specialist is they can't get access to them. They get a list of five or six people who may or may not have an opening and who may or may not take their insurance. At the UNC Family Medicine Center in Chapel Hill, where Goldstein sees patients, there is also access to a behavioral health consultant. This is the largest single practice in the UNC health system, with over 25,000 patients and 75 providers. And in a busy primary care practice like this, between 40 and 60% of my patients come in with a significant mental health concern, whether it's depression or anxiety, or a family member suffering from bereavement, he said. After doing the due diligence on what it would take to start an integrated care model at East Pittsburgh, the go-forward number was $300,000, and Goldstein was confident the money could be raised. No family is immune from the harms of mental health, and what we found is that everyone has a story. Everyone says if behavioral health resources had been accessible, it would have helped, he said. 10 meetings in several months is what he thought it would take. Instead, in just 3 visits with potential donors over a month, they reached the $300,000 goal. This will cover the cost to have a full-time behavioral specialist in a practice with supervision, he said. We know that it will cover a minimum of 3 years. We hope it does 5 years. During that time, metrics will be tracked to evaluate its benefits. My goal is to prove to UNC Health that this collaborative model works, that it's scalable, and that you can do this in other community practices, Butler said. It doesn't always have to be a giant academic center or a practice with dozens of family doctors. This is something you can do in a medium-sized practice in any community. And yes, I would love to see this integration of behavioral health into primary care propagate. In her first 4 months, Fuentes has seen 110 patients. There are some people I've seen one time and others I've seen 10 times. I do sessions with individuals, with couples, and a lot of parent support work. It really depends on how to best serve the needs of the patient, she said. The program provides short-term counseling with a treatment plan, typically entailing 8 sessions. Long-term, the patients can also see Fuentes when they visit their primary care provider. The goal for continuity of care and longitudinal treatment is to develop these relationships and to be able to check in with them after we provided some stabilization and short-term therapy, Fuentes said. Project Life exists to shed light on executive health and worker wellness. The series includes regular articles on worker stress, work anxiety, depression, and addiction-related issues that creep into the workplace, and personality features from executives that are on the forefront of this fight for better health in our workplaces. Iconic Tower signs another headquarters. A California real estate firm that owns a prominent tower overlooking Interstate 40 has landed another major tenant for the office building. Fresh on the heels of landing the new headquarters for Aspida Financial, Drawbridge Realty has signed Victra, the largest authorized Verizon retailer in the U.S., to fill the entire fourth floor and a suite on the first floor of the 11-story Imperial Tower, formerly the IQVIA building off Page Road. The lease covers more than 40,000 square feet. Victra will relocate its headquarters from the space at the Colonnade office building in North Raleigh, where it has 25,681 square feet. The move will occur in July, shortly before all of the improvements and amenities that Drawbridge is adding to the building will be done, according to Mike Embry, Managing Director and Senior Vice President for Drawbridge. The fourth floor is 30,287 square feet, and Suite 100 on the first floor is 12,838 square feet, Embry said. Victra won't need much work done on the fourth floor and is using most of the existing infrastructure. However, the company will have a significant amount of work done on its first floor space. Embry said Victra approached Drawbridge in the third quarter of 2025. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods Real Estate Investment Trust is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.